I mean, we were messing things up left and right because we had no wiggle room for mistakes. But, you know, I answered the messages, I answered the complaints, and I was like, I'll fix them.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Going Deep with Aaron Watson. We are switching things up a bit today and interviewing Kate Zarvis, the founder of Manicure, a nail salon in Lawrenceville in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I am getting particularly fascinated with service businesses and how they're run and operated. Kate is absolutely killing it. Her company, Manicure, just opened their location within the last year, have been growing like gangbusters, using social media to build a brand. This conversation touches on how Kate developed her skills as a nail stylist, how she built her business, and what the future holds for the nail care industry. I found it fascinating. I think you'll learn a lot from it and admire this gritty entrepreneur. So check out my conversation with Kate Zarvis.
You're listening to Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
So Kate, welcome to Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show. I am excited. This is a completely novel interview experience for me. We have not yet interviewed any founders, entrepreneurs behind a nail salon. So I'm curious, just to start off with, what the inspiration was for Manicure and how you came to own your own shop.
Okay, so Manicure was born this January. January 10th was our first day open. So we haven't been open for a year yet. I've been in the beauty industry since I was 15. My first job was washing hair at a local like mom and pop shop. Yeah. I did that until age 18. My dad made me go to college for 3 months, even though I didn't want to, realized that's not where I wanted to be. Came home, pursued beauty school, fell into the hair industry. That's where I'd been washing hair for so long and always in the salon. That's the only job I ever had. So went the hair route, and my first job, the owner was a nail tech. So even though she put me on the floor doing hair, she couldn't really guide me where I needed to be. So I started like messing up hair left and right. I was not confident. And in this industry, confidence is key.
Yeah.
So because she did nails, she was able to actually teach me, hey, like I'll teach you how to do manicures. Whenever you're not busy doing hair, you know, you can be doing nails. Well, I've got extremely comfortable because I could ask her, why isn't this working? How do I fix this? She put me through a very intensive training program. And that's whenever I decided I don't want to be in the hair room. I'm more comfortable here. I just want to do nails. And that kind of started my nail career. So fast forward 5 years later to me always having the dream to open up my salon, but the stars were never aligning, and thank God they weren't, because I would have been like drowning, you know what I'm saying? I was actually working downstairs at Swank Hair Studio for 2 years, and that's whenever she decided to expand with hair, and I was taking up too much space. So up here, it was our landlord's office. He was moving to Arizona. The space came vacant, and it was a perfect transition for me to open up my salon. So the inspo of Manicure, I found it in West Palm Beach whenever Desposito just came out with Justin Bieber. And yeah. I just remember like driving on the highway, the palm trees were everywhere, Desposito was on, and I was like, I need to bring this back to Pittsburgh. So hence the banana leaf wallpaper, like kind of a beachy vibe. Yeah. But
it's definitely a different mood. I mean, and I'd imagine particularly once it gets cold out, someone comes up here and they just feel like they've kind of escaped from the brutal Pittsburgh weather. Two things I want to get clarity on. The first is when you're talking about being downstairs at Swank, you were effectively running like the micro, like your own business, had your book of clients down in that area. And it was just because of being a young business, you didn't necessarily want to incur the cost of rent and having an entire space for yourself. So you had a smaller area. Is that what you meant by that?
Exactly. So I worked for a few years in Bridgeville. That's where I started doing nails. And then whenever I left Bridgeville, came to Lawrenceville, and I didn't have any clientele. So even though I was the only person doing nails downstairs, I had to build my client base from scratch. But yeah, I was the only nail tech there. And I was just like taking up a whole wall. My nail polish was everywhere. And the owner of Swank didn't really want to expand with nails. Hair is her forte.
Makes sense. And the other question I have is around beauty school. So you mentioned you tried college, went to beauty school instead. Like, how long does that take? What does that entail? Because that's something that I'm not very familiar with.
So there's three degrees you can get for beauty school. Cosmetology is the whole shebang. It's hair, skin, and nails. You learn it all. You're licensed in all. After you're licensed in after you have a cosmetology license, you can go on and do whatever. Or you can go for nails. Cosmetology is 9 months. Nails is, let's say, 3 months. Skincare, which is called esthetician, is also 3 months. So I went for cosmetology. Took about 9 months, and then that's how I was able to jump from hair, and then I fell into nails.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you can be ready to enter the working world with a actual marketable skill in 9 months versus mm-hmm. some of these colleges that take 4 years and you don't even know what you do after you're done with that. But so you got here, and then when we met at the Pittsburgh Tech 50 Awards, you told me a fascinating story about how quickly upon opening this destination that you built up a client base and kind of had people beating down your door to get their nails done here.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you why or how, or I would definitely tell every young entrepreneur in this industry to do it. But truly, we opened in January, so I was by myself downstairs. It was Christmas season, and that's the busiest season of of our year. And whenever I came upstairs, it was January, which is the slowest time of the year, let me remind you. And I had one nail tech, Victoria. We had never worked together before. Her first day and my first day up here was our first day together. And to be honest, I didn't train her because it's January, the slowest season. We'll get there as we move in here. Her first week, she had 40 clients and she only worked 40 hours a week.
That's wild.
It was insane. And that just continued. So we were messing things up left and right because we had no wiggle room for mistakes. But, I answered the messages, I answered the complaints, and I was like, I'll fix them. And since January 10th, it's been like that. So I quickly hired my second employee, and she even said that when she was starting, she was anticipating, a lot of downtime sitting around. Her first week, 40 clients. And then my third employee, the same thing. My fourth employee, the same thing. I feel that Lawrenceville just... there's so many young people who live in Lawrenceville, and there's no great salon in this area on Butler Street. So I feel like the location had a lot to do with it.
Certainly. But the other aspect of it has to be the ambiance, and even beyond the way that the space is decorated. Like you mentioned, you have wine or coffee if someone comes in. I'm sure that a lot of thought is put into, as much as it is the caliber of work that the stylist can do on the nails, there has to also be, for lack of a better word, a bedside manner, or how you think about how do people feel welcome? How do they feel like this is their space as opposed to just a place where you kind of get a service done and then leave, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
So from the salons that I've worked in, I've learned a lot about how I wanted my salon to be. I want my clients to feel welcome. I want them to feel at home. And I teach my staff that, always, I don't care how good you are at nails, just be nice. And that's kind of, that's our number one rule. And we don't have a dress code. And I think that makes my employees feel very comfortable. And then our clients feel very comfortable as well. Sometimes whenever it feels too uppity and maybe they're in their scrubs or they're in their sweats, they're like, oh, I'm not dressed nice enough for this. And everyone looks different here. All different shapes, sizes, hair color, we're all very comfortable with ourselves. And I think that we bring that aura here.
Makes sense. Now, in terms of, you talked about the cosmetology degree and it covering these different areas, skin, nail, hair. In the beauty industry, is that, so with Piper, and this is, I'm always drawing comparisons back to my own business, but what's particularly powerful is someone who in the media space can do audio, can do video, can do these different kind of forms of media and be this kind of multi-purpose star. Do you have a lot of people coming in from an employment standpoint who have those multifaceted skills, how you tried hair and also went into nail? Or is it usually something where people specialize and kind of double down on one thing that they do particularly well?
In this industry, focus wins.
Okay.
I truly believe that. And if you, almost like practice makes perfect, but if you have your hand in every cookie jar, then you're not going to, I don't think that you'll be extremely successful in one. This industry takes a lot of practice and a lot of time. So to get good and to create your skill level and to grow your skill level, you really have to be honed in.
Makes sense.
My esthetician only does lashes. She only does facials. My nail techs only do nails. If you were doing, all the services in one day, then would you really be able to perfect one?
Yeah. And when you have a bigger team, it allows different people to specialize. So on that front, in terms of getting better, you mentioned that it takes a lot of practice, and I'm sure that if you have 40 clients in 40 hours, that's a good way to hone your skills. Are there other steps that you take to either like stay on top of trends, like it may be a different color or a different style, or I don't know, like this, I've seen pictures of the ones with like people do hair attached to their nails. I don't know if you guys are into that, but like
fuzzy nails.
How do you manage that part? Are there places that you go? Is it Instagram? Where do you learn that type of stuff?
I'm thankful for social media because we're able to see the trends as soon as they're happening. I couldn't imagine like only having magazines and newspapers and trying to keep up with that. It's right. really at our fingertips. And we can see what all the celebrities are doing, the celebrity nail stylists, and all that. I work for Gelish. It's a company. It's a nail polish brand.
Okay.
And so I'm able to tap into that where they're always keeping me up with the trends as far as not really the way things like the style trends, but more of the product trends. So like, how are we extending nails? What products are we doing? Stuff like that. So yeah, I would definitely say that probably social media is the best way that I kind of hone in on the what people are wearing.
Makes sense. How often do people come in and they're like not sure of what they want versus they know like the exact color, the exact like do this picture that I've already found for you guys? Like, what's the balance of that?
I almost want to say it's 50-50. I feel like there's two types of women in this world, okay. You know, a type who knows what she wants in her nails and a type who doesn't know what she wants in her nails. So, you know, my first client can say, I want red on this finger, yellow on this finger, stars, stripes, and the whole nine. And I want them to look exactly like this. Sometimes they even bring in a picture and they're like, copy this. And then on the flip side, I have clients that say, do whatever. And that's almost harder for me because I don't want to disappoint. So it comes in the consultation with, well, what don't you like? Are you sure you don't like that? What do you, you know, are you going to an event? Why are you getting your nails done? And so on.
Makes sense. Does nail polish go bad? Is it like, if it sits on the counter for 3 months, does it go bad?
It does have an expiration date, yes. And it says on the bottle.
Yeah.
Gel is different than nail polish. So nail polish can go bad, and you know it's going bad whenever it gets thick and chunky. It's as simple as that. Gel has about like a 1 year lifespan, and it does say on the bottle, so it's easy to find out.
Gotcha. And then how often do clients come in? Like, I'm sure that there's people, it's, you know, for special occasions or like a certain time of year, like you were saying with the holidays, but are there people that are coming in? Like, I know my grandma used to go for her hair salon, because I had to go with her when I was little. It was like every other week. And it was partially, she wanted her hair looking right, but it was also partially the, like the social routine of seeing her friends, and like it was just part of her routine. Do you see people coming that frequently?
Yeah, so we have like our base clientele comes every 2 weeks for gel, sometimes every 3 weeks, and then we have some that come every 4 weeks. And in between them, we have our like special occasions or birthdays or dinners or whatever it may be. So I would say 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks.
Gotcha.
Clientele comes back.
Now, in terms of scaling up the team, like you mentioned, you brought someone on, they filled up, What have you learned about like attracting the right type of talent to your team to fill out the space?
So that's probably the hardest part of my job.
Yeah.
Not finding talent, but trusting that person that you go on a 1 hour interview, maybe less, that she's going to be, you know, a good employee. And that falls under loyal, respectful, hopefully doesn't steal from you, you know, stuff like that. It's like, it's very interesting because, you know, you date a guy and you don't move in with them for maybe a year, but like here I am going on a 30-minute interview with you and now you're working for me. So just like I really go under, as long as you are nice, like please be nice. I can teach you how to do nails, but it's about your personality, that you are able to chat with me. You have a good vibe. You have a good personality,
yeah.
Smiling, and you're just, I just feel like you're a genuine person, and I have been, I guess I have an act for that because all of my girls are extremely genuine. They're so nice and they bring so much joy here.
That's awesome.
My first two girls had experience doing nails, and everyone else I've kind of trained from the get-go. They didn't have any experience.
Wow. So is any part of the interview process like them doing your nails or something like that?
If they have experience, yes.
Okay.
If they don't have experience, I know it would be like a crapshoot, I guess.
Yeah.
So if they say, I have a nail tech that says that she's been doing nails for 3 years, our first interview would be me meeting her, chatting about her goals and, you know, that kind of stuff. And then the second interview would be her doing my nails.
And would you have like a specific thing, like I want it done a specific style or specific way, or you kind of like show me what you got in terms of how you like to go about it?
Yeah, I definitely guide them. So that'd be so nerve-wracking if I didn't. It might just be like 5 nails. 1 nail would be per service. So like gel, 1 nail acrylic, 1 nail French, 1 nail a design, and then maybe another one like show me what you got on the next two and seeing where their skill level is. And it's more of let me see where your skill level was, and then that's how I know where to train you.
So another thing that I was thinking about as I was preparing for this conversation was the fact that this to me seems like one of the best businesses in terms of being insulated from getting disrupted or like the digital revolution. Like we've interviewed people who are building artificial intelligences to like replace reading contracts like lawyers, or using, you know, self-driving cars or other things like that. And yet a service-based business like this is so far from people coming in just like looking to get the thing done. Like there's so much, not only of like, do I trust the robot to, you know, apply the nail polish correctly, but like the environment, like you're coming here for social reasons. You're coming here because of the vibe that it gives. It's so much more than just like something that is a commodity, if that makes sense. So I don't know if you think about that at all, or if like you see tech kind of like starting to come in any way, shape or form. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. So luckily, girls will never stop getting their nails done.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they do, pigs can fly. So I have seen the tech industry kind of trying to disrupt it.
Right.
So we do nail art, right? We hand paint nail art on people's fingernails. Well, they have machines where you can print out your own nail art and then put it on your nail that way. You would still have to come to the salon. We would have the machine here. It would print out a picture and then we would stick it on your nail. So it gives the client probably the same amount of freedom where they can pick what they want. But they'd be able to get like the Mona Lisa on their nail, which I can't really create.
Yeah. It can be super finely detailed because it's the robotic precision of like a 3D printing type of setup.
That's exactly what it would be. Yeah. I don't think that it's doing very well. Yeah. And even whenever I saw it and I thought maybe I should have this in my salon, my dad actually brought up a good point. He was like, I'm not sure if people would like that because they like that you do the work.
Yeah.
You know, and it would break that personal vibe.
And that's what I was even kind of thinking about that to some degree. And it's like, you know, if a robot read a contract for me and found 8 like small errors, I wouldn't be like, oh, I wish a human had found it. Like there's none of that feeling whatsoever. It's more of like a safety thing. Same thing with the self-driving. If the statistics show that I'm safer sitting in a car driven by a robot than driven by a human, like sign me up. Like I want to be safe. That's really what I'm here to do. And conversely, like that's just not the essence of what this experience is. The essence of this experience is, you know, you find the stylist that you like, you find the salon that you like to go to. And there is so much more to it than just like just maybe there's a small segment of people that would want it. I just want it efficient. I want it, you know, super finely detailed or what have mm-hmm. you. But for a lot of people, that's not even what it's really about.
Yeah. I think that if they could scale it to where you use the machine in your own home, then it would cancel that. So like you're either going to go get your nails done at a salon or you're going to do it at your own home and your own convenience. So being that the machine has to be in a salon, I don't think it works.
So the other thing that's interesting is you got into this industry, like you were already washing hair when you were 15, mm-hmm. you went to beauty school, like you had a real idea that this is the type of work that you wanted to be doing. Mm-hmm. As you've gone into business for yourself and now you have rent and now you have people that you're hiring and doing this other stuff, how have you gone about building the skill set of the entrepreneur business owner to go along with the skills of the cosmetologist?
That was quite the learning curve because, you know, I've been in the salon for years. I knew in my head what kind of salon I wanted to have. I've worked for so many people under a lot of different management. So that could train me on like the way I wanted to act. But as far as the business side and the entrepreneur side, being that I went to college for 3 months and I was undecided, you know, I did the university 101 classes, didn't really give me any guidance to opening up my own business. That's where Pittsburgh comes into play. And Pittsburgh has so many free resources that I use. I went through Chatham's entrepreneurship program. And I think I spent $45 total because I went to a QuickBooks class. And I sat with the head of the Women's Entrepreneurship Center. Her name is Anne Flynn Schlitt. And she sat with me and she was like, this is what you need to do. Also, the Small Business Association has a website. I ended up calling them, just like cold calling them, saying, I want to open a business. What do I do? Got on the phone with a really nice gentleman. He sent me pretty much a packet of how to open a business 101. And it had everything from the check blocks to the laws to this to that. And that kind of guided me as well. Who then hooked me up through the SBA, took me to Pitt's Entrepreneurship Center, which hooked me up with my first loan. So I did apply to like 6 or 7 banks and got denied by 6 of them. And then luckily I was able to go through Pitt and they hooked me up with a nonprofit that gave me my first business loan. But it was about an 8-month process.
Yeah. And I can tell you, as someone who went to Pitt, like there's not a lot of education there in terms of like, oh, this really prepared me to be a business owner. So much of it is the exact thing that you demonstrated of like, I'm going to go just cold call, find the person I need to talk to. I'm going to get the answer for myself. And it's really your will and your kind of doggedness, for lack of a better word, that creates those results, as opposed to someone just kind of handing you the answers. Like we only found out when we started Piper. It was like our first day in business and we were at the Carnegie Library. And this woman basically explained that like, oh yeah, I like help people all the time with, you know, business formation and like other resources like that. It's like, no one even tells you that. Like you have to go digging for it. And we just kind of happened upon someone who that was their thing. So
yeah, I feel like in a nutshell, if you were to ask me how I opened my business, I just Googled it.
Yeah.
I Googled how to open a business, Pittsburgh, where do I go? And that's where Chatham came up. Pittsburgh's Entrepreneurship Center came up. So yeah, I just kind of hustled my way through it.
Yeah. And I don't want to make light of the hustle and the hard work that you had to do to get your name out there and to build those clients. But the flip side of it is that answer is so inspirational, because you literally went to Google, found these free resources, and like got, at least from a structural standpoint, everything that you needed. It's not so unobtainable or so far. It's really just putting your head down and working a little bit.
Yeah, and you can do it. If you want it, you can do it.
Absolutely. I find that like just incredibly inspirational. Any other piece of advice that you would give yourself when you were starting off, like now that you've kind of been in it for a while and you're still, you know, not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination, but looking back, like, oh, I wish I'd known, or I wish I'd understood this to a greater degree.
Looking back on the process is so bittersweet, and I shed so many tears in the frustrations, and I had never used an Excel sheet in my life, and that was probably the worst part of it. Yeah. But advice, I don't know. I don't know if I would like, I wouldn't do anything different. Yeah. I would not do anything different. Cause I appreciate the way that I kind of battled through it, but to someone wanting to do the same things, I would have definitely advise them to use the free resources and the amazing colleges that we have here, you know, right at our fingertips.
Absolutely. Beautiful. We're going to aim towards wrapping up. And before we have you issue a challenge to the audience, I want to make sure that people learn more about Manicure and everything that you're doing. I want to give them digital coordinates where they can follow along. What's the best place to do that?
Definitely Instagram. Instagram is where you can see our portfolio of all of our work. So it's covered in nails. Yeah. So if you like nails, if you like nail art, definitely head over to our Instagram. It's ManicurePGH. And all of my employees have their own pages. It starts with Manicured By and then their name. So go check us out. You can see all the cool nail art that we're doing.
That's smart. Do you have to train or kind of talk to your employees about how to do that effectively, or do they, some of them tend to have an intuitive sense for how to promote themselves?
Both? It's both. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some do, some don't.
Yeah.
But I help them.
Smart. So all of that's going to be linked to in the show notes for this episode. People can check that out at goingdeepwitharon.com/podcast, or they can just go into the podcast player where they're probably listening to this right now and find all the links to check out Manicure and Kate's accounts. But before we let you go, I want to give you the mic a final time to issue an actionable personal challenge for the audience.
Personal challenge is something that I struggle with every day, is stop comparing yourself to Instagram and everyone on Instagram. My business is so linked to Instagram. I'm constantly on it. My boyfriend calls me a serial scroller because I'm always on it. But, you know, part of it's me advertising my business. The other part is seeing what other nail techs are doing. And this other part of is probably me comparing myself to all the Instagram models out there. So please, for the day, you know, try to don't compare yourself to other people's highlight reel.
100%. But it's also a really good idea what you said too. If someone else is doing something well, like taking that idea, like not kind of stealing shamelessly, being like, what's working for them? Let's see if it'll work for us. So I think there's a great balance there. But yeah, focus on yourself, and better to compare yourself of the present to yourself of the past than anyone else's present. That makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. We just went deep with Kate Zarvis. Hope everyone out there has a fantastic day.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Going Deep with Aaron Watson. If you enjoyed this, then you need to go right now to goingdeepwithaaron.com/event to check out the Going Deep Summit. March 23rd in the city of Pittsburgh, we are going to be convening a group of 200 of the finest entrepreneurs, thought leaders, creators, makers, thinkers, dreamers in one place for a day of connecting, a day of learning. We're going to have some great talks, and you need to be there. You need to get your ticket. You need to mark your calendar. March 23rd. I'll see you there.
Thanks for listening. Connect with Aaron on Twitter and Instagram at AaronWatson59.